This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
Your biggest marketing tool in food and beverage is your impact on shelf. I think what's exciting for us is our secret to having self-funded for 6 years and survived was very much customer collaboration with big retailers on developing innovation jointly. And then you create this thing called Taste Loyalty.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show number 4646. Welcome once again. If you are listening in for the first time, thank you very much for joining us. If you are listening in again, having listened to previous episodes, then, you know, again, fantastic. Thank you for joining us. If you've listened to all 45 prior to this, then you probably deserve a medal or a gold star or something like that. But let me know, email me, and I shall send you a badge to commemorate the fact that you've listened to all 46. Today, we are going to talk to a gentleman by the name of Troy Douglas, who is the co-owner of a brand called Nexpa, which is a naturally sugar-free product, a naturally sugar-free beverage. That comes in all sorts of different flavors, lemon, orange, cola, et cetera, et cetera. They're available in Coles, they're available in Woolworths, BP garages, 7-Eleven. You can kind of see them everywhere. They're growing at a rapid rate. They've been doing this thing for about 8 years now. There's two of them in the business. Troy works with his bestie, Drew. Interesting story about how they came about the IP that they have in the business, about how they got in front of Coles and Woolworths. They're now starting to sell into Sainsbury's in the UK, which is obviously a massive achievement. But also, you know, about their branding, their packaging, their route to market. It's a fantastic story. So tune in, listen to Drew. I think you'll learn. Listen to Troy. God, that's anyway. I got confused with which one I've spoken to. Listen to Troy. I think you really enjoy that. Now, before we get into that, remember if you can go and rate and review us on iTunes, that is fantastic. You can also listen to this where you're listening to this, but if you're listening to us on iTunes, then keep listening to us on iTunes. But you can also find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Audio Boom. I think that's it. I don't think we're on SoundCloud anymore. I think we stopped putting them on SoundCloud, but poor old SoundCloud gets left behind. But if you want to come and talk to us, that's also fantastic. www.simondell.com. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Email us at hello@simondell.com, whatever you want to do. Look, it's just nice to hear, you know, when we get messages or when I get invites on LinkedIn and people put in the little message thing, love your podcast. Man, that's just, look, it's great that we get that feedback. So, listen, and the last thing is a hideous self-promotion, because one of the things I do in my part-time when I'm not working with clients and recording podcasts is I like to write. So I actually put my very first short story up on Amazon.com in the Kindle edition. So there will be a print edition, but you know, if you want to go and have a read of that, it's 99 cents, so that's fantastic. Very affordable for anybody out there. It's called Edison's Medicine. It is a story about autonomous vehicles. So if you're a Black Mirror fan, if you've watched Black Mirror TV show, if you're a Black Mirror fan, you will enjoy that. So please go and have a read of that as well. So otherwise, let's jump in with our interview with Troy. So welcome to the show, Troy Douglas. How are you?
I'm amazing. Thank you, Simon, for having me.
And you're in Sydney as well. My previous guest was in Sydney. So whereabouts are you in Sydney?
Yeah, I'm a Bondi man in terms of where I live, but the office is in North Sydney. So I'm currently just in Nexpa HQ in North Sydney.
Cool. Now let's talk about Nexpa startup. Give us your elevator pitch of what it is.
Okay, well, we've been going. So Nexbar is Australia's naturally brave brand delivering naturally sugar-free innovation to the world. So myself, I'm the co-founder and currently global CEO is my role. We've been going 8 years. We're very much a business which spent 6 years innovating. So I guess the IP of the company sits in the fact that we have a natural sweetener blend, which allows us to create no sugar and nothing artificial products. And both Drew Bilby, who's my other co-founder, and myself, we're just passionate about the opportunity in this food and beverage industry to accelerate natural sugar innovation in a way that will then make a meaningful impact on diabetes and obesity through, I guess, reducing high sugar and or artificial consumption. That's probably cool. A long elevator pitch. But
That was good. That was good. But give us an idea to everyone where they can get your products. Where do you guys sell at the moment?
Yeah, cool. So as I mentioned, Nexbar, the brand itself is about naturally sugar-free products. So obviously our focus is currently beverages. We're in obviously Coles, Woolworths. Our core ranges are sparkling waters and soft drinks. And more recently, we've innovated with the likes of Coles and Woolworths to launch some more functional beverages, including probiotic water and kombucha. We've also got tonics. So for those of you that are listening and enjoy a bit of a mixer, you can now have a tonic mixer that's naturally sugar-free.
Are you? Do you export as well, or are you just Australia? Or just Australia at the moment?
Yeah. So my role for the company is we've been very much an Australian business only, but more recently, so we self-funded for 6 years, and then in January 2017, once we cracked this IP, we then went out on a bit of a capital raise process, which is a massive learning curve for myself. I was driving that with a gentleman called Steve Mobani. And we've secured $4.5 million worth of capital. And then, so what's that meant for us is we're sitting on Australia being our focus core market, but we obviously identified that this innovation is a global opportunity, and we picked the UK as that first invest market to crack. And what's exciting is this week was the first time it'll be publicly announced in the media next week, but we're launching into, so if you're listening, don't spread it.
It's going to probably be a couple of weeks before this actually gets to air. But yes,
cool. So. Well, by that stage, we're well and truly in all Sainsbury's, the big supermarkets over in the UK. So
cool.
It's pretty exciting.
That must be a fair jump as well from a revenue perspective for you guys to start selling into another country.
Yeah, I think we're a business. We termed ourselves, I think, a startup for many years, and I think once you're 8 years in, you can't necessarily call yourself a startup anymore. So we're definitely what we call ourselves now, scale up.
Right.
And we've revenue-wise, last year we grew at 156% growth. This year I expect us to exceed that type of growth again. And, yeah, the UK is an unbelievable opportunity, and the partnership that we've got with Sainsbury's, we could be anywhere from sort of 1 to 15, like you just don't know where it's going to land and how big they want to innovate, like what our Australian retailers are doing. So I can't really quote the growth, but it's strong.
Where's the product manufactured at the moment?
Yeah, so we're way back when we began, Drew and myself actually imported a canning line in from Asia.
Okay.
So my background was law and communications. Drew's background was engineering. Both of us had really no idea what we were doing.
But well, that's how all the best startups start, mate. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. And so we actually originally, from a manufacturing perspective, had our own little mini canning line. When we started with our first products were iced tea in a can, in the most expensive can you could pick, being a 355 mil can. And effectively, the reason why we imported and did our own initial launch manufacture was the fact that nobody could pack a non-carbonated can in Australia at the time. We then quickly realised that we're not the expertise in the Australian market on production and manufacturing, so we sold off that machinery line when we secured our first customer, being 7-Eleven, back in 2012, and then that's when we began manufacturing partnerships with other Australian contract packers. So we produce in Melbourne and Sydney. And from the UK manufacturing perspective, clearly it's not the most commercial model to be shipping an export across from Australia to the UK. We have done that for our initial launch, but clearly our model is about taking our IP and then partnering with established contract packers in other markets.
I'm going to take a big step back right to the start because you went to university and studied law, didn't you?
Double degree law and communications at UTS.
And it, again, weirdly, which was exactly the same as the guy I've just interviewed prior to you, I did law as well. At what point did you go, fuck this, this is not any fun?
Well, it took me to probably pretty early on because it actually took me 10 years to complete my law and communications degree. I think I was the only, and it was very recent. It was this year I actually finally completed it. I think early on, I think obviously yourself and the other person that was previously on, like when you are in school and you do quite well from a mark perspective, you kind of get led in a number of pathways. But for me, I just wanted to have, I guess, a general degree, but I was always passionate about brands and business. So I think the moment when I realized that I wasn't going to be a lawyer was probably when a lady called Sharon Williams, who runs a company called Taurus Marketing, spoke at uni in the first year that I was there. And just hearing her talk about customers and business got me excited. And then went up to her and said, can I work with you? Be an intern. And she said yes. So then I ended up working full time with her and studying full time. And then I reflected on, should I actually give law a crack? So then I read an article in a magazine, and this guy, David Wilkie, who was a partner at Allen & Overy, he kind of was a guy that I looked up to, and I thought if I was going to do law, I think I want to hear about this guy's journey. So I just kind of hit him up on LinkedIn, ended up having coffee with him, had a conversation, and then he hired me as a paralegal at Allen Overy. I definitely wasn't expecting that because when you're in the law world, you usually need the amazing marks, and I definitely didn't have that. But he took me in under his wing. I had an amazing learning experience there. And then at the same time, that's when Drew Bilby, who's also my brother-in-law, he kind of came to me and said, I think there's an opportunity for Better For You Beverages in Australia. Do you want to join me? And I was like, why not?
Let's talk about the brand journey, because I think the first thing I want to get an understanding of, I used to work in the beer industry, beverage industry, so I'm quite passionate about that space. But I think that the couple of questions I sort of want to start off is get an understanding about how the brand came about. Now, for those who don't know, the Nexper brand, I kind of is a bastardization on the beach that Drew was sitting in when he came up with the idea. Is that right?
You're one of the first people who's told me that story, and that is right.
10 out of 10 for me. Exactly. Gold star goes to the top of the class. Right.
Yeah, a place called Rio Nexpa. And we didn't like the sound of the P, and ultimately we wanted a name that didn't have a meaning so we could create a brand that was ownable and could go into different directions.
I guess creating that, you've got a name, you've got a concept. From a brand perspective, what sort of came next after that?
Yeah, it was very much about product. So I think what the brand has evolved, even though we had a massive refresh in the last 2 years in terms of our logo itself. It was always this bubble with Nexper in it. But quickly what we realized is because we were, I guess, revolutionizing existing categories with naturally sugar-free, we then wanted the brand to evolve to be renowned for that. So we actually put naturally sugar-free in our bubble. I think that's the brand evolution from a physical logo. From the business perspective, I think our vision and mission's always been quite similar. The only thing that's really evolved is it it did take us 6 years to crack the naturally sugar-free ability, which was to match that taste, because we quickly realized consumers don't want to lose out on taste, even if they realize that health's important. So for us, it was surely there's a way to make great tasting things that are also better for you than the alternatives of sugar or artificial ingredients.
When people see your when people see your packaging, it's kind of best describe it. It's kind of that you've got that kind of natural cardboardy coloring with the bright colors and the you know, the logos and very clear taste cues on it, and also in a clear clear bottle. Why did you go down that road? When you did the refresh, what were the, you know, who did you work with on that? Was it something you guys came up with, or was there another agency or a designer involved?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a really amazing agency in Sydney called Frost Collective that we worked with. I think way back when we started, it was literally myself and Drew working with designers that we knew, almost friends, evolving the brand. And what we did do is then just start to do a bit more testing and see what resonated with consumers. And I think the challenge for us as a brand in a marketing message sense is that sugar-free has been made synonymous with artificial and diet categories and all that type of impact. So for us, what we needed to do is how do you get naturally sugar-free across? And even when you do get naturally sugar-free across, there's still, what does that actually mean? Because it doesn't mean. So that's why you, on our branding from a product perspective, on the top we always have no sugar, nothing artificial is kind of our definition of naturally sugar-free. And then it's very much you need, we back up proof points and why the products are the other benefits that we also have on the sides of the products. But yeah, it was a big process, even when like, do you make, because in this industry and you're familiar with it, how big do you want to actually make the brand itself? How do you build brand equity as you grow? And ultimately, I think what's exciting for us is our secret to having self-funded for 6 years and survived was very much, it's about customer collaboration with big retailers on developing innovation jointly. So that meant that we did want to put Nextbrew quite significant on the packaging to build that trust.
I can see if for those people that do go and have a look, the I'm guessing the video that you guys recorded has got the old branding on it.
That does need a refresh. I get nervous when I see that because I was a lot younger and fresher.
I haven't actually watched the video, but I'm going to watch it now you've just said that. So I mean, you've got the white can. I think, you know, I mean obviously the branding looks fantastic. What when you mentioned earlier on there was some collaboration, like did you go out and test it, or was it just kind of, you know, shoved it in front of some friends and family and went, what do you think of this? Or did you do a proper you know, focus groups and going out there and ask people what they thought of the new branding and packaging?
I think when we were in startup land for 6 years, it was completely friends and family and what we liked in testing. And then as the business has grown and evolved, clearly your ability to have access to data or distribution, which allows you to then test rates of sale. So I think we did trial by error.
Right.
No, which, made many mistakes, many mistakes along the way. But ultimately now we have done, it was a process of does this resonate with some focus groups, et cetera. Yeah. And the positive impact, and this was a refresh that happened sort of last year, and obviously when you change packaging, it takes time to flow through into the market. It's now flowed through, and we've had a significant uplift in our sales, which is nice. So I feel like we're making, because your biggest marketing tool in food and beverage is your impact on shelf.
Yeah.
So you need to prioritize your focus.
What and I've, again, back from my history and other people that I know, selling into the Coles and the Woolworths and the 7-Elevens of this world, that itself is an epic battle, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But once you've done that, you've then got the challenge of getting the end consumer to pick a product off the shelf that they have got, you know, no fucking idea of what it is. They don't know how it tastes. It's a completely alien brand to them, and all the fantastic packaging in the world can sometimes still not get over that. What other marketing things did you do to sort of breed that awareness and encourage trial to the end user?
It's a great question. I wish I knew the exact answer. Ultimately, we have seen a lot of businesses over an 8-year journey backed by multinationals launch and fail with significant marketing spend behind them. So I think what we very early on realized, and part of our story was a gentleman called Peter Barron that we call the godfather of Nexwa. He invented Sipper, the flavored straws, but he instilled that in us, and because he's seen many businesses lose a lot of money trying to put marketing initiatives behind it. And I think what we then focused on was it's very much a distribution and shelf space. How do you encourage the retailer to give you significant shelf to then draw the opportunity of the 20% of undecided people to give your product a crack? And then the ultimate reason, I think, for why Nexwa has been able to grow is due to the fact that we prioritize taste, and then you create this thing called taste loyalty. That said, the business is now in a different period where we are scaling up. So we are trialing strategic marketing initiatives and making sure that we can measure those initiatives. So we've got a really amazing girl, Katia Saunders, who's jumped in. And she's able to do a lot more testing. We've just recorded our first sort of ads, which are rolling out now, which really is having a bit of fun about the fact that a naturally sugar-free product actually exists, right? And what does that actually mean?
You're saying you're rolling out some ads. What's her plan for that rollout? I mean, where do you put the ads? What's the, you know, where's she testing out?
I think what's nice now that we're got scale with distribution and we're getting access to data in terms of sales is we're getting to learn more about through Nielsen and Aztec and Quantum data through voice, all that type of stuff. We're getting to learn a little bit more about our customer and our initial customer. Clearly, I think naturally sugar-free is something that everybody should be interested in if you are somebody that doesn't consumes other things other than water. But it's very much digital through Facebook, Instagram, targeting consumers that we think will most resonate to trial first, those early adopters. And for us, it's people who are probably health aware we see as being our early adopters. We're also putting these ads physically into the open air cinema across Australia. We've done a partnership with them. So that's an experiential kind of, you'll see the ad. We're the only sort of products available, non-alcoholic, and you can also mix it, so that they'll be served at those venues as well.
Back to the other point that I was talking about, there was the actual sell-in to the big boys, to the Coles and the Woolworths. We've had people on the show who've experienced that. I've got a personal friend who's 3 months ago cracked Woolworths for the first time. How do you do that? Do you just sort of ring up and hassle buyers, or, you know, what was the process you guys went through?
Another great question. I think it's everybody will have their different stories. I'm sure your friend does. For us, 7-Eleven was that first big national account, and that's when we changed our business model from producing it ourselves to working with a contract packer. But we developed this customer centricity and building innovation with retailers. So what's unique to Nexwa is we are the leading player with our natural sweetener blend in this naturally sugar-free space, which means that we're so I'll tell you about the 7-Eleven. It did take, as an example, that took 18 months to get a meeting. and then when we had that meeting, Drew and I also had BP on the same day. It was literally a moment of And there's a guy behind 7-Eleven who was the buyer at the time called Dean Spencer. I say his name because I think he's worth a mention. He actually was also the guy that gave Thank You Group their first Thank You Water, if you're familiar with that brand.
Yep, absolutely.
He was the same buyer that gave them an opportunity. And I know Daniel Flynn quite well. So I think for us is having a buyer receptive to a challenger brand to give them a crack. And then what led us to more retailers is clearly we made sure that we had a unique product differentiation that could hopefully add incremental sales to that business. So that was, I guess, the fortunate story that we had with 7-Eleven. And then when we talk about the big two guys, Coles and Woolies, it was very much, again, we developed our soft drink range in collaboration with Coles. We developed our water range in collaboration with Woolworths. And what's nice about both of them is clearly they're the big two guys, but they both believe in the fact that a naturally sugar-free alternative is a required space. So they've been very supportive of our brand, and to knock on wood, we've got a really good relationship, and we look forward to, I guess, continuing to grow with those guys.
When you sit in a meeting with 7-Eleven, Coles, Woolworths, first meeting, you're there, presumably you guys are, you know, you've put a suit on for the occasion, or or you've rocked up in shorts and thongs or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever worn a suit.
It wouldn't really fit with the brand, would it, if you guys rocked up in suits, would it? It doesn't really fit. I was going to say, what's that first meeting? What are you doing that first meeting? Do you bring a pitch deck? Have you got a slideshow? Is it just sampling? How do you get these guys on board?
I think you do need to make impact. I think that we've been on Coles and Woolworths. I will share that what Drew and I did do is we sought out somebody who was really well connected and talented in the retail space. Obviously, we hadn't done it before. So Steve Smythe, he's our commercial director. He's been with the business now 3 years, and he's an incredible part of our family, and he helped us prepare for those meetings. And we really very much we now go in. We want to know as much as we can about their business and what they're looking to do in their strategy, and then it's about how do we craft our product and brand to be a value add for their strategy. So I think that's the secret to getting an outcome, is if you're there to add value, because ultimately that person, that buyer that you're speaking with, that buyer may change in a month's time.
Yeah.
So you need to survive. You need to have relationships on multiple levels, and you need to also know that you're tying into the bigger picture strategy to make sure that you stay in. So we've been in the big guys. Woolworths is more recent. Or in 2015 was when we first launched into Coles. And we've had multiple products that have added value, but the price point was way too high. So, it's very hard to get everything right and hit a sweet spot. So it has been a teething process for years with those guys. Another story which might be interesting to your question around impact and succeed in a meeting. This is a funny example, but for Domino's, we were the first brand to, other than Coca-Cola, obviously the contract's now switched to Pepsi, but we were the first brand to sell some non-Coke product in Pepsi under a Crafted by Nexpa brand. So it was a brand that we developed jointly.
Right, okay.
Next Gen. But for that meeting with Don, the CEO, who's obviously in the media a bit, took in a guy called Sugar Man. So we got a friend of ours to wear a white latex suit and hold a bowl of sugar, and we just got him to sit in the corner. So when Don or any of the team were like, "Who's that dude?" We're just like, "We don't want to talk about sugar."
who took the bullet for that role?
There was a guy that used to be in Sydney and support a guy called Brody. Anyway, and then he was back in Queensland, so I called him up and said, "You don't mind wearing a white latex suit?
Do you mind sitting in the corner of a room in a white latex suit?" I bet that's his claim to fame. He talks about in parties now, and that he, when he went to Domino's that day.
Yeah, well, it was a really good story for us. Ultimately, that product, again, it sold incredibly well online. But when you put a brand that can, there's no consumer awareness in a Domino's fridge, and if you're not familiar with their stores, they're not actually really visible. So in-store, it wasn't getting the traction. But it's an example of thinking through how do you make an impact, I guess, in a meeting.
How do you, I mean, you know, we all know the social media space, and we all know that, you know, there are people in that area that are you know, less positive and things like that. Do you have your share of, you know, trolls and people that are negative about the brand? And if you do, how do you deal with that?
I think that we're a hard brand to probably troll.
Right.
I'm touching wood.
I'll have a go this afternoon if you want, but no.
I think we have had some, obviously there's the loyalists of the big multinational brands that, and Cola is a hard product, right? To actually crack the exact taste of Cola, you pretty much need to be as artificial as possible. So it's a hard flavor to create. That said, some people really do love our Cola that we've got, but there's things like Zendesk, like Practically is, so T has been setting up Zendesk properly, so we have a way to respond quickly. Just getting the right system in place to be able to handle feedback. We get a lot of customer feedback, and I think we're quite a naturally strong brand with advocacy, which is awesome. So for us, it's more about how do we harness the feedback, good and bad, and use that in a way that can build our business.
You mentioned Zendesk there. What else do you guys use from a technology perspective in the back end of the business? I mean, you know, this is kind of real sort of nerdy stuff, but it's interesting to hear different companies that are using different things to, you know, to streamline or automate their business.
Yeah. I think ultimately, as your team grows, it's how do you keep everybody on the same pathway and vision. So you want to try and find platforms to do so. We are still looking for the perfect sort of task list platform. I don't think there's an amazing one out there. From a physical things like finance side, Xero is a platform that I'd recommend to all people in business. It's just for scaling up businesses. It's quite the modern version of, I guess, the MYOB world, etc. But that allows myself to be always across the finance in a much bigger way. And when you start out, we didn't even have a platform for the first year, like as a spreadsheet stuff, and that it's funny. Like if you're all in, you should probably go all in. In fact, I could absolutely recommend you need to go all in with a platform like Xero or just an accounting software. You need to have that from day one.
The website, what's that? Do you know what that's built in?
Yeah. I should know. I know that the sales side is through Shopify.
That helps, because I was going to say, I mean, a lot of people recommend Shopify for, you know, for that kind of, you know, when you haven't got like a, you know, 1,000 different products that you're selling and things like that.
Yeah, so. No, Shopify is great. And it's got a lot of ability to integrate with a lot of different platforms. So
do you have people that are ordering on, like wholesalers ordering online, or is that going through another system?
Like how the big guys order from us and stuff, you're building EDI systems into the ordering capabilities.
Right.
And from a consumer sales side, that's definitely an area where we can grow. Like Australia's a bit behind international markets with direct-to-consumer sales of product like beverages. Yeah. The challenge being the physical size of Australia and the number of people makes the cost of shipping for heavy products hard.
Absolutely.
But it's definitely an opportunity to do. So we have it set up properly. That's part of Tia, who's joined us. We've got a real big refresh of our e-com whole platform as a whole. So you'll see there'll be some changes that start to evolve in our business in the coming months.
Last three questions. First one, what are some of the brands that you like, that you, outside of your category, that you admire and, you know, buy all the time?
I'm working a lot with Nextwell, so I'm probably not a giant brand purchaser. But in terms of businesses and brands that inspire me, the classic one for me personally is Virgin, and I feel like every entrepreneur or founder probably says that. But I really was, like Richard Branson as an individual, I was inspired by his ability to have a brand that could go into multiple different areas and stand for being that kind of challenger business. There's a gentleman called Ray Dalio,
yep,
who has a hedge fund with, yep, Bridgewater. That if people haven't listened to Ray Dalio Principles, that's something that's been impactful on myself.
Do you know I think I am the only person in the world who did not enjoy that book. But I
really,
I,
yeah, why?
Absolutely, because I just. And I've listened to Ray Dalio speak and on podcasts and things like that. And, you know, the guy's,
yeah,
you know, the guy's a very educated, experienced, yeah, guy. I just did not enjoy that book. Just maybe it was just the way it was written. I know it's going to sound really picky, but I think it was the way it was written and the way that it was presented in terms of its structure. It just annoyed the shit out of me. I kind of got three quarters of the, or I got two thirds.
You're probably like my business partner, because I think he probably won't like
it. I got two thirds of the way through, and I was just like, I can't. There's a point in when he goes off and he starts talking about someone famous. I think it's a basketball coach or something like that, and it's a paragraph, yeah, where he references this basketball coach, and then he just stops that story completely and goes back to something else. And I'm going, what was the point of that? I was just like that. Anyway. I digress completely.
See, but it's an interesting thing you comment on. Like last week, Drew and myself did this thing called the High Growth Ventures Founder Program that was set up by a lady called Amanda Price at KPMG, and that has caused us to have all this internal reflection. And you did this like, because we've been in this business, it's the only real thing we've done for the last 8 years. We've never done like the corporate psych. Like tests on your personality traits and all this type of stuff.
Yeah.
And well, I feel like you'd be very similar to Drew, and he probably won't like listening to Ray Dalio either.
What annoys me more is that I haven't really been able to formulate properly why I don't like it. I just know that I don't like it. Let's not talk about that. Because I could go off on a tangent where we will be here all day. Any other brands that resonate for you out there? I mean, you mentioned Thank You Walter as well. I'm kind of guessing within your category.
I think in every category there's really in clothing. I should have prepared some answers here.
Don't worry, like catching people off guard. There we go.
I think businesses that I'm and there's plenty of them that I'm excited by is ones that have like a framework of profit for purpose structure. I just think there's an ability for brand, even like us, like where I wish I was, we were a heavily profitable company today, but it's more about we know that we're doing by accelerating our growth, we're going to accelerate an industry to become naturally sugar-free. There's countless good brands out there. And
what have you got planned? So second to last question, what have you guys got planned for 2019? So 2018 is almost over. What's on the horizon for next year?
Yeah, again, there's a lot. I think what's been interesting for my role in the business has actually been to probably over the years it's been to make myself redundant over and over by getting incredible people into the business. So we've recently had a guy called Vin Ramanathan join as our CFO, CEO, and we're really clear on our strategy for the Australian context. So it's really accelerating growth with our core products, the soft drinks, the sparkling waters, and then seeing how our new innovations go with the functional, like the probiotic waters are commonly just in Chemist Warehouse, but clearly there's an opportunity to put them through the bigger supermarket chains. And so, yeah, getting, I guess, starting to expand channel distribution in the Australian business. And then my focus is really we've had a big bet. We've rolled the dice. We're in stores in the UK. And that in itself, whilst we're a business in high growth, that just creates capital focused opportunities. How do you then how do you align that business strategy with your capital strategy? So that's part of my, I guess, role.
Yeah, because I'm guessing Sainsbury's in the UK aren't paying you up front for product, are they? So,
well, if they're listing, I'm happy to let's move to that model. No, not currently, but it is a really good partnership. They've got this thing called the Future Brands team, and we're one of the prioritized brands.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, it's still one of those challenges. Like, there's, it's funny. There's always challenges at any stage of growth.
Of growth, yeah. How did Sainsbury's actually come about? Was that just contact of a contact or?
Yeah, I think being 8 years in and having, I guess, a performance proof point being the Australian market, that allowed us to, it was through good contacts, I guess. We got in of our $4.5 million worth of investors. We've got some pretty amazing people, in that. And they've got a big network of people that want to support this business as well. So I had a random dinner with a lady in Charlotte and her husband, James, who had a company called Goo Desserts. And Charlotte and James recommended one of their commercial directors, a girl called Laura, who, it was amazing, and she helped set up all these meetings. And then the model was, we're going to go to a new market, we're going to pitch to all the key retailers in the UK, and if none of them bite, then we'll move on to another market. And that's kind of what happened. Went over, had meetings with them all, and really fortunately, Sainsbury's is a big player, and they obviously saw that there was an opportunity for up brand. So
have you gone into all of their stores, or is there sort of a, do you get like, you know, maybe their top 40 or?
No, it's a huge launch. We've gone into all 548 of the key supermarkets. To be honest, they would want us in all fleet, but because the initial model is coming out of Australia, it wasn't the best decision. It was a challenge for us to even go into that many.
No, understandable. Mate, last question. How can people get hold of you if they want to ask you a question or they want to try your products or, they just want to hang out with the pair of you in North Sydney some point?
Or I might be down at Bondi Beach, who knows. But, I'm happy for people to connect via email or like we've got acroadandexpert.com. That'll flow through to myself if you're like, hey, I want to chat to Troy or whatever.
And you're on LinkedIn? Are you?
Yeah, LinkedIn's actually probably that's obviously one-on-one easiest way to do that. So just Troy Douglas on LinkedIn. You can probably guess my email. It's Troy@Nexpert. It's not. Troy@Nexpert.com. So that's easy.
Cool. Mate, thank you for your time today. It's been really good hearing the early stages and the transition of a consumer product and a retail product and the challenges that you face. So appreciate your feedback and your ideas, and thank you very much for being on the show.
No, thanks, Simon. I appreciate the opportunity. So hopefully it wasn't too boring for everybody listening.
Not at all, mate. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
That is it for today. Thank you very much for listening in to Troy Douglas from Nexbar. Check out their product, nexbar.com. And also, if you get a chance, remember, rate and review us on iTunes. Otherwise, join us next week.